Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, and it is the greatest radio network in the world. If you would like to hear a lot of shows, we have so many shows on this station, and they're all excellent. Better than excellent, I would say. I would definitely encourage everyone to check out Heritage Radio for all the other great shows. You just heard a spot from Jimmy Carboni. He's a great dude. I just got to work with him last weekend at the Jazz Age Festival on Governor's Island, and anytime I get to hang out with that guy, it's just a straight-up good time. Awesome pleasure. And speaking of hanging out with good people that I really admire from our beautiful industry, in the studio today I have my good buddy Brad Gutcher. He is at Leonard's Keep and Perla. And then in the studio as well, I've got my buddy Ken O from Lucky Luna in Greenpoint. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, like, I've been thinking about this lately, a lot about, like, restaurant bars. There was an article in the New York Times that I was a part of. They talked about, like, some, like, great restaurant bars, and I was featuring it. And it's one of those things that, I consider, like, being a bartender more than just slinging drinks. It's good to be like an all-around hospitable host, you know, and that includes food, that includes hanging, that includes shuffleboard or bowling. I mean, you do a little bit of it all, right? Brad, we met a long while ago, it seems.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. You've been, I've darkened your door quite a few times, just in the fact that you have been a bartender at Roberta's here.
Absolutely.
So you've probably seen me at my worst.
or some would say your best.
Well, I try to be a professional.
Absolutely.
In my drinking. So welcome to the show. One of the things I love about having bartenders on the show, I get all kinds of authors and distillers and brewers and people from all over the trade, but one of my favorite things, not just about the show, but about being a bartender, is meeting other bartenders. And you guys are some of my favorites. So, like, what got you guys into it? Why are you bartenders?
So, what got me into bartending was I was living in Atlanta, Georgia. I was basically playing music for a living. So I was touring with these, like, different punk rock bands, playing drums, traveling the country. And I was really into beer. My father is like a huge beer nerd. He's a home brewer. And so every different city that I would go to, I would basically check out, the local brewery, the local beer bars, stuff like that. So eventually, I played music for so long and I wanted to sort of do something else. And I decided I wanted to live in New York City because I was coming to New York, five, six times a year. Living on the East Coast, like that's the biggest city on the East Coast. So I was coming through New York, made a lot of relationships, and I decided I wanted to get into essentially the beer business. So I moved up here and I applied for every job within the food industry that I could find. Dishwasher, busser, barback, waiter, bartender. And I remember my first day, I went on Craigslist and I applied to, I think it was 102 jobs.
Wow.
And the next day, yeah, exactly. Like, the next day I applied to like something like 75 more, and I think I got like 3 or 4 callbacks, yeah. Zero experience. Of course I did, I fudged on my resume a little bit And I got a call back from a bar on 23rd Street and 10th Avenue, Izakaya 10. Actually, a really great izakaya. And I knew nothing about sake. I knew nothing about spirits. I knew nothing about wine. I knew nothing about Japanese food. The only thing I knew about was beer. So the position was for a bartender. So essentially what I did was I went on Wikipedia and I studied sake for 2 or 3 days straight and just went through, looked up every single resource that I could find about sake. So during my interview, which was, maybe 30 minutes, I knew enough to fudge what I knew about sake, which was basically nothing, but I knew the right words to use. So I was hired there and I bartended there for about 6 months, and it was pretty interesting experience because I'd never worked at a restaurant before. So people would say do 30 roll-ups for me, and I'd say, okay, cool, I'm from Atlanta, how do you guys do your roll-ups up here, what I mean?
Yeah. How do you do it up north?
I want to make sure I'm doing it the right New York style, because of course I never done a roll-up in my life. I knew how to do a drum roll, but not not a roll-up. So I worked there, and it was amazing. I had to basically learn how to make all these classic cocktails, as well as I learned a lot about sake, shochu, and Japanese cuisine. And right around that time, a place that's now famous, Italy, opened up, and it was basically my dream job. I was going to work on the rooftop as the head bartender of this basically brew pub and beer bar. And initially, it was supposed to be involved with 4 brewers, one of them being my favorite brewery in the world, Russian River Brewing Company, mm-hmm. Out of Santa Rosa. So it was going to be them. It was going to be Dogfish Head, Beer del Borgo, and Balladine. So long story short, at the last minute, basically Russian River wasn't able to participate. What happened was I got hired, and they said, it's going to be a couple months before the brewery opens, but we're going to put you in this fine dining Italian steakhouse called Monzo. So no problem. I can last a couple months. It's going to be fine. 2 months ended up being about a year. And I was working for this incredible chef by the name of Michael Toscano. So there, I was having a similar experience to my first job, where we were doing fine dining procedures. So now I knew how to make an old fashioned, a Manhattan, knew a little bit about service, and knew a little bit about sake, which did me no good at an Italian marketplace and steakhouse.
Really? I don't understand.
So I worked with the chef, Michael Toscano, and I fell in love with his food. And I fell in love with his style of service. So basically, after about a year, they decided that, the Italy brew pub on the rooftop opened. And they moved me up there, and I was very excited to work up there, but also was going to miss working with the chef and all my staff at Monzo. And so I worked up there for about 2 years until Michael opened his own restaurant, a place called Perla in the West Village. It's a 24 Minetta Lane by a restaurateur called Gabriel Stuhlman. He has 6 restaurants: Joseph Leonard, Jeffrey's Grocery, Montmartre, Bar Sardine, Perla, obviously, and a place called Fedora, great bar as well. So I moved over there, and the biggest change from moving there, his cuisine was similar to what he was doing at Monzo, but that's where I really learned about service. The whole concept about Perla is to throw a party, and my buddy Ken can talk about that as well. We worked there for over a year together. But the whole thing is, when you go to a party, the food should be good. Maybe have a nice bottle of rosé or something like that. But
keg stands
are mandatory. But really, a good party is about conversations, friendship, a good vibe. The music's just right. It's nice if someone makes a good bean dip, but that's not going to be the star of the show, right? So the whole concept that I learned at Perla was just hospitality.
Just being an awesome host and like making sure that everyone's having an awesome time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Brad's great. He's also an entertainer at the bar, so he's a fun guy just to go see. It's like, where do I want to go tonight? Where can I go where I know I'm going to have fun?
Yeah.
So you go and see Brad or, you know, your neighborhood bar and you know people's schedules.
Yeah.
You know what nights to go to places.
It's Tuesday night. I should go see so-and-so.
Exactly. So that's what it's kind of become.
So you guys started together, or you guys met at Perla.
You guys met at
Perla. And you came, Ken, you came from the West Coast.
Yeah. So I got started in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and I actually first got hired as a server at a more corporate restaurant and sort of talked my way into being a lunch server. And then moved to nights, got promoted to like supervisor and management. And through all that, I was always looking at the bar like, why is it they look like they are having so much more fun than we are?
Because we are.
We are, yeah.
So eventually I talked the GM and those guys to train me to bartend. And they were like, well, why do you want to bartend? And I was like, because it looks more fun. It's another skill I can acquire. And they're like, well, we kind of like the path that you're on. And I was like, well, I want to bartend, so make me or teach me to bartend, or else I'm going to find another place that will.
Yeah.
So the next week I was bartending.
Nice. Yeah, it's one thing to be like, you know, as a person who manages teams for bars and restaurants, you know, it's one thing to like recognize that someone's a really, really amazing bar back or a really amazing like waiter or back waiter or host.
Yeah.
But dude, if you want to change positions, man, that's up to you. That's not to anyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you gotta do what you do, and that's good that you made that call, man. Granted, it's really, really difficult when you have like a good bar back to like have to refill that position. But it's your call. At the end of the day, it's your call, you know.
The bar backs make you look like king.
Yeah, you're a bartender. Exactly. And that makes you look like you're having more fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
they allow us to have fun and let people have a good time, but they're doing all the work behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember the last time I cut my finger from, like, prepping garnishes. No, that's not true. It was yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a part of, like, well, what we were talking about before, too, is, like, the being in, like, the restaurant environment, you know? Well, first of all, I want to go back to something you were saying before about learning about, like, sake, like, online and stuff. It's just amazing that, like, we have that information, that's available to even be able to, like, fudge your resume and kind of fake it through an interview and get in the front door, you know? It's
absolutely
pretty amazing. We're living in a really amazing time as far as the amount of information that we have out there. And there's so many resources. I mean, I feel blessed to like do this radio show and to talk to guys like you and like all the past guests, you know, and just learn from everyone. I feel like I'm, you know, and a lot of that information comes after hours. Like, you know, like with this show, talking with bartenders, and like I was saying before the show, that a lot of the stuff that we learn isn't necessarily during service. It's like after hours when we're talking shop. And that's basically the inspiration of the show. And that's what we're doing right now.
Absolutely.
What were some of the things that turned you on? What were some of the first moments, pieces of information that you gathered as a bartender that kind of made you feel like you had clicked into a different level?
One of the things that made me click was just, honestly, just the ability to turn someone's day around. Like, it's such a special gift to be able to, if someone has a rough day and they, you know, they go to the bar and I supply them with great food from our kitchen, either a great glass of wine or a cocktail, and also just show them a good time. And if they want to talk, listen to them. If they don't, let them read their book. You know, that's the type of thing. It's, you know, working at the bar, you run across a lot of solo diners, because it feels a lot better to sit at a bar if you're a solo diner than it does to sit at a table. They just don't make one tops. And
right.
And that empty chair is, table. You know, it's a little telling. So, you know, it was really fun being able to, maybe even someone is reading their book and, you know, you say, How's your day going? Like, how's the book? Is it any good? Should I check it out? And, you know, if they say, yeah, it's fine. It's, okay,
then you,
cool.
Then you know to walk away.
You know, you let them read their book. That's what they're here to do. But many times, you know, the books, it's not a prop, but it's, you know.
It's people, a distraction.
It's a distraction, and people want to be engaged. And that's a beautiful thing that we're able to do, is to talk to people. And I've met so many amazing people on the other side of the bar, as many people as I've met behind the bar, so many amazing people on the other side that I've been able to connect with outside of work that have become regulars, and I see them, you know, on a weekly or monthly basis. So that was amazing. The other really sort of a polar opposite is just learning the technical side. As far as drinks go, you know, my goal is to make them as delicious as possible. You know, sometimes you can make drinks that are cute or they're, you know, have a concept, but at the end of the day, I want the drink to taste as good as possible, which is something that I basically have been studying through a few buddies of mine, one being John Pleasure, who we worked with at Perla. He now works at Milk and Honey, Lantern's Keep, Featherweight, and Weather Up as well. But I think there's a couple sides of the bartending world. One being sort of the more creative, artsy side, kitchen driven, all this kind of stuff, which I like. And then the other one is, I think, a little bit more of a scientific side. So you're focusing on dilution. You're focusing on the coldness of the glass, precise jiggering, where you're doing an actual proper meniscus instead of just sort of, I mean, it's almost a curse bartending a little bit. When I go out,
you notice it, like,
you, yeah, notice people doing it wrong. You know, someone's touching my glass at the top of the lip, and they're jiggering a 2 ounce pour that's really probably like an ounce and a half if I'm lucky.
You know, man, I realize that I used to be really, like, kind of picky about that kind of stuff when I just had to stop looking.
You got to stop.
I had to stop looking after a while because, you know, as a customer too, you have to, like, well, first of all, as a customer, like you were saying before, it's like, I mean, how many, you never know who is on the other side of your bar as a bartender. Like you're saying, you've got the person with the book that might be sitting there reading, you know, I'm sure, like, you've got people at Lucky Luna that are like, come in and they're like, you never know who they are. And, you know, it, like, if you don't engage them, you might not realize that, oh my God, this is like, I mean, who cares? But a critic from, you know, like the New York Times.
Or we did have that too, where all of a sudden we got a phone call and it was, hey, we're calling from the New York Times. We want to come by and take some pictures for an article. And we're like, excuse me? It's like, we are out in Greenpoint. What are you doing out here? Like, there's no way we should be in the New York Times. So we had a really great article written by us that we were really, really fortunate of having. But yeah, it's kind of the, you know, you have fun when you bartend. And the great thing about bartending that's different than serving is that you can sit and have that conversation with people and meet the people at your bar. It's very different to just stay and hang out at a table, you know, because eventually you have to leave. You can't just stand there and talk to your table the whole time.
They're at your customers are at your table.
At that point. Exactly. But, and even when I first started bartending, I didn't learn to jigger at all. It was free pours and counting. And, I was like, what is this concept of jiggering? This is just stupid. Just count it. Just count it until you realize how off the counts can be.
Yeah.
You
know? I mean, it depends. I mean, like, I guess, like, back when we started bartending, it was like, we weren't, like, really concerned with making all these, like, very delicately, like, balanced cocktails. And nowadays, you know, it's like, all right, let's make this shit right.
Do it right.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break, guys. And then when we get back, we'll continue talking with Brad and Ken.
Thank you.
Just one more.
We'll be right back.
following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, I have my buddies Brad Gutcher and Ken Ho. And we were just talking before the break about some of those fun moments of kind of like learning into the industry about like customer service. And going back on that point, it's like, you know, you never, like I said, you never know who's sitting on the other side of your bar. And that's really amazing. You know, I've gotten caught before by like, maybe I didn't engage the customer like well enough. Maybe they seem like they were like you were saying, Brad, before the break, in the first half of the show, about that customer who's like sitting there with a book. And, you know, I, as a customer, like if I go in solo to a bar, I always have a book on me, but I still want to be engaged. You know, like I'm a bartender, so I like to go to bars. I like to sit at the bar and have lunch there. But also it's like, I'd rather be talking to the bartender, and I would rather as a bartender be talking to the customer than them sitting on their cell phone. Like, I don't know what they're doing with their thumbs, but you know, it's like,
put they're the moving phone fast down. Though.
Yeah. They're moving real fast and they're giggling about something. It's like, was it, you just read a joke? Come on, tell me.
Yeah, they're trying to play Words with Friends or yeah, Candy Crush, exactly. Right?
But you're in a bar. It's a social environment, you know? And you have to cultivate that and you have to, you know, nourish that.
I know one piece of advice that I was given that was really important to me is never lie to the guest because you don't know who they are. So, for instance, you know, you're pouring someone a glass of wine or you're making them a cocktail and maybe they ask you something that you don't know. You know, what's the grape breakdown on this glass of wine? Just say, I don't know. Say, I don't know. I'll find out for you. I know it's like a Cab Sauvignon Merlot blend, whatever, but I'll find that out for you. Because when you lie to someone, obviously you lose trust. And with my...
And they might be the producer.
They might be the producer. They might be the distributor. They could be anyone. And I know that I always get a bad taste in my mouth when I go to a beer bar. when I go to a beer bar, which is, you know, where I started, basically, and I either hear someone saying something to a guest or to me that's not right, you know, just say you don't know, and you'll find out later. You know, that's like...
Or, you know, what I like to do is... I've been in that situation before, and it's my fault for like being behind a bar where I don't know. Like, it's you know, one of the things that's fascinating about being a bartender is like that you'll never know everything about everything. About you know, you'll never know it all, and that's great. That there's a huge human element involved.
So much fun.
And but you know, if you were sitting at my bar and you get a glass of wine, and you're like, so what's the grape breakdown in this? I'd be like.
Which I would never do either.
Well, you should be ordering cocktails. In my life. Yeah. But I'd be like, you know what, man? I'm pretty sure it's this, but let's try it together.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
Because then it's a shared experience. And then also you get to have a little splash of wine.
And you bring them into it too.
Yeah.
Into the experience.
It's like, let's try it together. And like, what do you think's in it? Is this Viognier? What's going on in this?
Could be.
Let's find out together. Hold on, I'll grab the menu.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it too. And you can even pour different tastes and compare the two or three whites you have by the glass or whatever.
Here's Bordeaux blend. There's a classic Bordeaux, like Cab and Merlot. And then here's a California Cab. Let's try them side by side and see the difference. You know, like things like that.
You know, I realized that, and speaking of California big wines, I didn't realize how much my palate had changed after coming to New York, because I worked at Italian restaurants, so we served 100% either Italian or French, And I went back and had a California cab, and I was like, holy crap, this tastes like fruit juice.
Yeah.
It was so big and so jammy, and I didn't realize that when I lived in California.
Isn't that amazing, though, like, how your palate changes regionally? Like, I mean, it's the whole win in Rome thing, I guess, but, you know, I don't drink a lot of tequila, but when I'm in Mexico, man.
Yeah.
Good God. Tequila. I mean, I don't remember drinking that much, but it happened because I don't remember it. But, you know, like, when you're in Texas, drink Lone Star. When you're in San Francisco, you're drinking, you know...
Fernet.
Certain things are popular in places because they make sense, usually.
Yeah.
You know, because of the climate or because it's...
The air,
it's fresh, local.
When you're
air,
in Colorado,
culture.
The air is so different. You know, you want to have Stranahan's. You want to have, you know, Flying Dog.
Certainly. Know? That's... It always... amazes me a little bit when, you know, like when I go to a dive bar, I get a bottle of beer usually, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe a whiskey or something like that. If I go to a cocktail bar, obviously I get a cocktail. Mm-hmm. When I have, you know, when I go to dinner, I typically drink wine. But I think there is a little bit of mentality of like, you know, you want to have everything, you know, you want to be able to have whatever you want, wherever you go. But
isn't that just like a weird like American thing too? It's like
I feel like it
we just
be.
Want a, we just want everything. Apparently,
have it your way, right?
It's like I want to drink rum on the beach.
Yeah,
that makes sense. You know, that's totally makes sense. I want to drink whiskey when I'm in Kentucky.
Yeah.
But when you're like when you're in Colorado and you want a Mai Tai, that's great. That's great, man. But really,
time and place, right?
Yeah, I mean, like. I went to Austin, Texas a few years back, and I remember going to this place, and I don't think he's even around anymore, but they had so many drinks that were, like, that had, like, pepper, like different types of, like, peppers in them, like serrano or, like, jalapeno, you know, and I was like, oh, well, that makes complete sense, because we're in Texas, you know, or in, like, New Mexico, you know, like... That it makes complete sense. Like having green chili beers in New Mexico. It's like, yeah, hell yeah, that makes sense. Isn't that weird that we just...
You got to think about that,
we
right?
Just have, yeah. We have too many options.
The Negroni is the one exception, though.
Yeah. The Negroni is always good.
Anywhere.
That's true. Jack likes a Negroni. He's...
Jack's a good man.
Do you guys have a...
I can hear him giggle through the studio glass.
Do you guys have a preference? Are you 1-to-1, 2-to-1?
Oh.
My wife is actually...
Equal parts all day for me.
Yeah, I'm equal parts. My wife is
equal
actually...
Equal parts for me, too.
Yes! Yes, hey, you know what? We are all equal parts,
yes,
man.
Yes, we are. My wife is the exception. She likes the 2-to-1. Brad and I... Yeah, I mean, when we go out or when we make them at home, we would do the... The house,
you mean at your bar?
The house proportions, where it's instead of 1-1-1, it's either 1.5, 1.5, 1.5, or 2-2-2.
Oh, like that!
So it's
going big
house proportion Negroni.
Wow, I like that. That's like the opposite of what I normally do. It's like I do the half size, like a martini, instead of a martini.
So it's a shooter, or
well, yeah, you make it, you pour it in the jigger. You just drink it out of the jigger. It's a little martini glass. It's
that's
a martini.
Yes.
That's awesome. Come on, guys. Get with the program. It's like a snackery.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, you're snackery daiquiri.
Chilled jiggers.
Yeah. I like to chill everything. My muddler is on ice, bro.
Yes, sir.
The wooden one, right?
Yeah. But I think, I mean, that's funny. Like, regional drinking. It's a concept that, like, when you're, like, you may never want to drink a pina colada, but if you're in Key West, and you're like... Yeah.
There's a time and a place.
You're like, oh, dude, I cannot wait to drink a pina colada. Or, like, if you're in New Orleans, you're like, oh, man, I can't wait to go to that frozen daiquiri stand and get weird with, like, a 40-ounce styrofoam cup full of, like, frozen, like, white Russian with an extra shot for a dollar, you know?
Yeah, I think
that's the best, by the way.
We did a couple trips down to Oaxaca.
Oh, nice.
And all we drank down there was mezcal and micheladas and Mexican beer.
Why would you have anything else?
Yeah, but So that's how we learned to love mezcal, is getting it neat, served with the orange slice with chili salt on it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we do it at our place now.
Yeah,
But it's
amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, never tasted better.
I mean, what are some of your other favorite regional drinks?
Well, there.
I mean, what do they drink in Georgia?
In Georgia,
peach?
Well, when I was there, you know, it was a lot of just cold beers. You know, it's hot down there. Cold beers, anything with a peach is good for sure. But
are peaches really like? I'm speaking from ignorance here, but I mean, I've been to Atlanta a few times. I've been to Madison, Georgia, for a motorcycle rally one time.
That's strong.
Yeah, that's deep, right? Went through Athens once, but I didn't really notice the like overabundance of peaches. What's the deal with that?
Maybe on street signs, every sign is like peach tree. The deal with that is that it's not in Atlanta. The thing about Atlanta is that it's sort of the...
Atlanta's kind of not Georgia.
It's kind of not Georgia. It's kind of like the Austin of Texas, you know?
Yeah.
So essentially, if you live anywhere near Atlanta and you want to go to a bigger city, you're going to go there. So you have a lot of people from around the area, but also you have a lot of Northerners there. It's a little almost rare to find people that are born and raised from Atlanta.
Interesting. So it's like almost like Miami.
Yeah.
With New York.
Yeah, definitely. So they have a amazing beer scene right now. They have a great up-and-coming cocktail scene. The wine scene is super strong. Food's getting better and better every single day. So it's, you know, it's a little mini metropolis.
Minitropolis? Yeah. I've been to like church, like youth group gatherings in Atlanta, and then I've also been to like strip clubs in Atlanta. That's my two ends of the spectrum, but I've never been to a cocktail bar. But it's been years, so maybe I got to check out Hotlanta.
There's a new amazing one called the Kimball House in Decatur. It's fantastic.
I've read about that.
Just got top five best new bars too.
Nice.
Strong. Shout out.
Strong. Well, I want to get off the subject of church trips and strip clubs.
Same block, right? They're on the same block?
They're on the same block. Actually, they were both in the Georgia World Congress Center downtown next to the CNN building. Mm-hmm. It was the same deal. And Brad's like, I guess I don't know if I want to end on that note. Ken, what are some of your favorite places around, besides your own place, like Luna?
Out here?
Yeah.
I mean,
Since you guys are both, like, kind of fresh, essentially, to the city.
Yeah, exactly. And we, you know, when I'm not working there, the last place I want to be is there, because we're there so much. But I enjoy seeing a lot of my friends at the bars. Like, I try to go see Brad whenever I get a chance. I go to Featherweight to see John and those guys. They do amazing cocktails, and it's one of those where it's not super crowded whenever I go in there, and I know there's always a seat for me, or just because it's a little harder to get to.
Yeah.
You know? But lately, Beloved's been great, too, because it's right down the street from us, so we go down there and see those guys and just do shots and beers and keep it simple, you know? But there's just so many places opening that it's so hard to keep up.
Especially in your neighborhood in Greenpoint. Yeah. Man, it's crazy over there.
Brad and I have been over to Taurus to try their, you know, their 20 beers.
Yeah. Oh, that place is great.
Can we all just get different beers and just keep switching?
Yeah.
You know? But it's there's just so much out there.
It's a good way to do it, too. I mean, go out with the... Like, it's good, you know, those moments like we were talking about before, going out solo and, like, doing your thing. But it's good to go out with some friends and, like, be able to try each other's drinks and, like, you can taste the entire menu in
always,
a few rounds, you know?
I'm a big fan of that, is everybody gets something different and let's trade.
Yeah.
You know?
Family style.
Yeah.
Family meal.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about you, Brad?
Favorite bars? I love to go to Attaboy. I love any bar that's open till 4, you know, because we get out late and it's nice to be able to rely that they're going to be open. You're not going to have last call right when you get there. A couple ones that Ken mentioned, Beloved is great. For wine, I like to go to Cork Buzz and Ten Bells, Terroir, beer stuff. Right down the street from Perla is the Blind Tiger, which is another 4 a.m. spot, which is always solid.
Well, I think we've seen the sunset from there, or sunrise.
I was going to say, I've definitely seen the sunset there. I mean, like, I mean, Attaboy, Mother's Ruin.
Mother's Ruin.
I was there last night. They had a frozen banana daiquiri in the machine, and there's always money in the banana cocktail.
That's crazy.
Well, so where can we catch you guys? Give us some shout-outs.
I'm at Perla Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then I'm at Lantern's Keep Tuesdays and Fridays, and then I fill in at Grand Banks, this boat docked in Tribeca.
Dude, how do you... Do you sleep?
I have more days off now than I used to.
Kid?
Well, I'm at Lucky Luna on 167 Nassau in Greenpoint. I'm there pretty much every day we're open. The one day that we are closed is Monday, and that's to kind of give us a little bit of peace and sanity.
Yeah. So you're open today is what you're saying.
We are open today.
All right. Let's go right now.
Yeah. Let's go. Micheladas.
Totally serious. Well, that's it. We're at the end of the show, and now we're going to go over to Lucky Luna. So thanks so much, Brad and Ken, for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Dan,
for having us.
All right. We'll see you next week on The Speakeasy. Cheers. It's going to get you
started. Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.